Join the football pod on Off the Ball.
You don't have that many years as a player. You can't scratch off a year and have a bad year just because your coaches are gone. You have to be strong enough to be able to say, we're still going to have a great year.
Join in the obsession and tune in to the football pod on Off the Ball in partnership with AIB.
OTB's The Hurling Pod with James Skell and Paul Murphy.
Welcome along. The stage set now for the All-Ireland semi-finals. We've had one of the great shocks in hurling championship history. Dublin downing Limerick in the sunshine at Croke Park. John Heatherton and Keane O'Sullivan with the goals within the space of a couple of minutes, helping the Dubs enjoy their greatest hour since 2013. Maybe ever with this win. I know Neil O'Callaghan was saying afterwards, they have to back it up against Cork or it'll be long forgotten. But a momentous win for them, achieved while hurling for the best part with 14 men. Without their captain Chris Crummy, who was sent off, they hurled the best part of an hour without him. Tipperary are heading to Croke Park, remarkably, for the first time since they won the All-Ireland back in 2019. It's a long gap for them. The Premier easing to an 8-point win against Galway in the second semi-final at the Gaelic Grounds. The rivals were united in that one by cheering the result of Limerick being knocked out before the game at the Gaelic Grounds as well. But the Tipperary manager, Liam Cahill, said to us after the game, and maybe these are just the mind games getting underway. He said Cork are now raging hot favourites and Pat Ryan is the only man who is happy about the results at the weekend. So that lays the gauntlet down before Cork play against Dublin. James Skell is here. How are you, Skell?
As the farmer said one time to me before, he said, how would you be in half your sheep dead? So, like, how? So how would you be Will and Bobby all the championship this early?
And Paul Murphy has to get ready for the Tipperary versus Kilkenny game, which is going to divide his family in a couple of Sundays time. Paul Murphy, how are you?
Good, lads. Good. Oh, good. Okay. My sheep are still alive, so yeah. I can't complain.
Sheep and cactus, alive and well and clean.
Well, you don't go around to Billy Ryan's house and try smashing up his cactus. That's all I know. Or cacti, if I'm going to give it the right plural there. Not cactuses, I'm reliably told. I have to start off with the comments that have come in, because some people went back to the pod from last Thursday. Again, I apologise, and this particularly goes out to some people like the OG, Tiago Silva, who didn't know what was going on with his week. Tommy Walsh, not that Tommy Walsh, also said to us that he was starting to give up. He got to Wednesday and went, where the hell is the pod? Thought that something was seriously wrong at that point. So we're back, normal time, Sunday night recording, out on Sunday night in audio form. Video form will be ready for you early on Monday as well. So all is okay with the world. But some people went back and checked, because I'm sure they were going, I'm sure these lads probably were giving Dublin every chance of winning. Turns out we weren't. And some of the phrases that we used during it. So this one comes in from Cine Dippers. Cinnamon dippers are nice. Watching in hindsight does not bode well for you on this podcast, lads. Gulf in class. Limerick by at least 10 points. Dry run for a semi-final. A step too early for this Dublin team. Oof. Picked up by Cine Dippers, who was parsing through the podcast. And this one came in from RandR8398. Some analysis highlights from this pod. No disrespect to Dublin. Shoot the lights out. 10 points minimum. Nice to get a run out in Croke Park. The third best team in Leinster. Learning experience. Written off before the game. They won't score. There's no goals in this Dublin team. And then we had Patter, who clicked on today, who said, I just can't wait for the next pod. A lot of Dubs are going to be listening. And then Jamie Hoban said, with the podcast being out later this week, I didn't get a finish before today's results. Decided to keep on listening just to see what was said about Dublin. It was like watching a horror movie where they can't see the demon that is standing behind them. That, I don't think anyone saw that, to be deadly honest. Like, the Spotify was kind of the same. I'll let the lads respond to this now in a second. But a lot of people pointing out the exact same. Yeah, boy. I can't wait for the next pod. Skettle getting personally insulted that Galway might lose by 6 points. And then as bold as brass, he said Limerick will win by at least 10.
Keep up, faceless.
Yeah, can't blame you there. There, yeah, boy. Sunders, I'm just looking forward to next week's podcast. And then, hold on, there was Animal Kai, was slightly in your defence on this one, who said, it's mad because the analysis here on the Limerick-Dublin match wasn't unfair at the time at all. Dublin hurlers had the performance of their lives. Down to 14, they worked non-stop. Incredible performance. Can't say the same about Galway. And that must be a really hard watch for James Skell. So that's a selection of some of the stuff that's come in the last 24 hours. Generally, I kind of leave the comments midway through the week and I'm not really expecting follow-ups after games. But I will openly admit, Paul Murphy, that we wrote Dublin off before this.
Oh yeah, and I do it all over again, to be honest. Any time back, like when I look back at it there, we spoke about last week, I was saying, oh, you know, when Leinster final, when Galway played Kilkenny, that I had a hint of kind of, you know, could this come out of nowhere that maybe Galway will mount a serious challenge here? But for this one, I just went, like, I completely stand over everything I said there last week. To be honest, like, I'll put it this way. Dublin won the match and were deserving winners of it. But if you told me Thursday night when we were recording that not only all that stuff we said, but also they won't have Chris Crummy and they'll be down to 14 men after 15 minutes, I would have said, get rid of 10 points, 20 points. Genuinely. And I will openly, happily have that conversation with anybody. Like, I was looking down at a few of the bits here. And obviously, we're going to give Dublin their full credit on this one. But I was there going, let's have a look back at Dublin coming into this game. They came third in 1B. So they're not in 1A next year. They came third. You have to get through four other teams before you... So the last, let's say, the other five teams making up the teams still in the championship, bar Dublin this weekend, were the top five teams from Division 1A. So it was Cork or Wexford and... Wexford and Clare were the bottom two. And then you have Antrim, or you have Offaly, and you have Waterford. They're all gone. So, like, you had the top five teams, and then you had the team that came third in 1B. You look back then, Galway beaten them by 5 points on the 25th of May. Like, that's only a few weeks ago. They were beaten by Offaly during the league. Fairness, bet them in the round robin then when it came around to it. There were so many parts you could look at there and go, now they have to bridge the gap to possibly the greatest team of all time. And a team that's sore after Munster. There's so many elements that, you know, I completely get it. And to be honest, when the match was over, I was like, I'm actually going to enjoy the wave of people telling us to shut up. Because if you are getting that wave of, like, you know, you wrote lads off and all this stuff, something seismic is after happening. And, like, I was wrecked after watching the game. I was absolutely wrecked. I know we're going to get into it. But to be honest, I encourage the comments. I encourage, because there's a lot of people, I'm sure, getting a lot of stuff off their chest there. They're delighted that Dublin are after winning. But if anybody, I didn't see anybody last week on any forum, on any podcast, on any paper saying Dublin are going to win this. I saw a lot of people saying the general drift of it was, you know, Dublin can and may, you know, hurt Tipperary in certain areas. And, you know, the other thing I will say is Conor Burke and Niall O'Callaghan said after a game we were written off. Like, I fully respect them by saying it, because I've been in that situation. Not that I've been in that situation before where you feel teams or people have written you off, but they're in a siege mentality at the moment. Like, they had no option but to go into this game absolutely taking the load of that, of people writing them off and people saying they've no chance, and turn it into some kind of fuel if that was to mean they could surmount a challenge.
But also they have to believe that themselves, Murph. So, like, I fully do believe when Conor and Neil went to that press conference after the game, and they both say that within our camp, we had the belief that we could produce this performance. We played really well in some of the other games. I think Neil O'Callaghan had referenced, say, the Wexford performance back in the round robin and how well they played the second half against Kilkenny. He knew the standard they could get to.
Mm.
To pull off a result like this, you have to believe that yourself. Even if it is a case of everyone else doesn't believe in us, you don't go out there and put in that type of performance, that type of work rate, the rallying when they go down to 14 men, unless you firmly do believe you can win.
Yeah, completely. And you mentioned Niall O'Callaghan there as well, that a few of his interviews, if you look at any of the interviews after other games, and we've mentioned it here, he's been so balanced, he's been so fair in his analysis, he's been, you know, he spoke about Dublin in terms of saying, we weren't good enough today. Even days where they were actually kind of decent, he said, no, this wasn't good enough, that wasn't good enough. And he's been really balanced and fair and very unassuming. You know, he never looks to say anything sensational to draw a limelight. You know, he's not that type of person. So when he came out yesterday and saw him being interviewed saying we were written off, I was going 100% completely fair, and he's not the type of person who comes out and just says these things and tries to have a pop. So, like, I was there going, he fully deserves to, not even to say whatever he wants or anything, but he fully deserves this kind of moment in the sun with Dublin, because not too long ago we were watching him doing it with Nafina, but how he's conducted himself this year, and how he's shipped some losses and how he's dealt with some wins and how he's spoken in general, I've just loved it. So for him to come out afterwards and say, you know, we've been written off, it's very unfair, blah, blah, whatever, it's completely fair for him to do that, because I just think he's been so balanced and measured in what he says that I have no problem with him coming out and saying those things.
Yeah. Scott, I know you're a keen hurling historian. Where do you put this one up with surprise wins that we've seen? Because I see references like, say, Antrim, Offaly, 89. I don't think it's as big a thing. You know, when Laois beat Dublin in 2019, when genuinely nobody expected them to win that game. But that has to be right up there because of how deep in the championship this result has come as well.
But sure, Will, I'm always saying on this podcast, like, context is everything, right? So I thought it was such a huge result in the hurling landscape that I even skipped hurling. I didn't look at any results in hurling because I was categorically convinced that was the biggest result or shock result in hurling I've ever seen. Now, someone's going to pull out, I put out a tweet yesterday about it saying it was the biggest result I've ever seen in hurling, shock-wise, and they're, lads are coming at me about 1909. I don't give a shit about 1909, okay? Right? I'm talking about the last 40 years in memory and historical memory, okay? And that's up at the very top because Limerick, everyone knows what they've done, the position they're coming from, the last game they played, the game before that they played, and how, you know, lethal they can be. And Murph went through exactly what I was going to go through in sort of Dublin's run into this game. So the gap, the perceived gap in run-ins, in class, in golf, in legacy over the last 5 or 6 years was monumental. So I went away from Irish or hurling. I went to worldwide sport. Where does this rank in worldwide sport? And I said, it ranks third. They asked me.
Go on.
Number one is Leicester win the Premier League, right? It's number one.
I thought you were going to say that, yeah.
Yeah. Number two was the Red Sox coming back in 2004 to win the World Series against the Yankees. Or to get through the Yankees, the ACLS game. And this is number three. This is number three, okay? So, like, to come through this type of result is impressive enough. And then, as Murphy said, I got a couple of text messages, particularly off one of my brother-in-law, when Crummy got sent off, and he goes, that's the fucking game over anyway. He's a dub.
Yeah.
Die-hard dub hurling fan. He says, that's the game over.
Everyone
nationally, and there's no... And come here, for all the dubs listening, let me be very, very clear here. You did not think Dublin were going to win that game when Crummy got sent off, right? And another thing, you did not think Dublin were going to win the game because half of you weren't there, right? Crow Park was empty, you could say, until the football crew came in.
Before we go any further...
Don't be pouring water on their good day here.
We're also going to get done by association for this. Like, the hurling pod had a go at people not going to the game. So it was only 15,000 at the Gaelic grounds between Tipperary and Galway, two of the powerhouses in hurling.
Oh, don't you worry. I'll get to that. Okay. Okay. But this is a home game in Crow Park where the footballers are playing after. There's no reason why that place couldn't be full.
Right.
And likewise, it has to be said too for a team that has given the county so much, the players in Limerick would have to say that the support they got would be disappointing too, I'd have to say. You know, wasn't enough.
Can I jump in on the...
Two-legged, jump in.
Yeah, well, one-legged, I don't know what you're going to say. In terms of, just going back to your point, in terms of it being like the greatest or one of the greatest, whatever categories you want to put it into, for me, it is, in my lifetime, because that's all we can go by. I know, again, like you said, people will go back to different dates. In my lifetime, I think it's the biggest shock in hurling. And again, I say all these things with full respect to Limerick and no disrespect to Dublin. But it's bigger than winning the Leinster final in 13 because they had form before that. There was form to say that. I remember going to schools in Dublin in end of 2011 and that we were after winning the cup. And all they wanted to know was what do we think of Dublin. I remember saying at the time, Dublin will win all Ireland in the next few years because that's what was anticipated, that this Dublin, that crop of Dublin players will win in all Ireland. They were already league champions by that stage. And so let's say by 13, which some people are considering where they won the Leinster final, and got, is it bigger than that? They had all-stars in that team. Like they had Gary Maguire was in that team, who was already an all-star. Liam Rush was in the team, he was already an all-star. Peter Kelly was about to win one that year.
Okay.
Danny Sutcliffe was going to win one. Like they had a mixture of that. This one came,
quality team, yeah.
Yeah, like this one came from so further back. And also a quality team that like Alan McCrabb got one back in 2009, I think it was. Mm. So like that generation of players, and there was lads there who were unlucky not to get them, Conal Keeney and so on. Like so... That crop had formed to say that before 2013, you know, they were going to do something big. But this is so kind of far back from that. And like, even if you want to go, right, it goes on par with it. Okay, they did it with 15 men. Like, again, you still have to add that element into it, that this was done predominantly with 14 men. And I know we'll get to it, but I feel sorry for Chris Cumming in that respect, in that it's probably bittersweet for him. But I think whatever way you want to quantify this, even if it was 15 and 15, the fact that they did a majority of it with 14, I just think takes it a step above again.
Can we jump straight in on the Crummy red card then, before we kind of praise how well Dublin played? Because this is such a key incident within the game. It would be even more talked about if, say, they had come up just short at the end and you'd say, oh, to have to hurl for nearly an hour, a man short. My instinct straight away, Skell, when I saw the incident, because people wanted to go, oh, Hegarty has taken a dive here, or Hegarty's gone down very soft. When I saw it on the TV, admittedly, as opposed to in the stadium, My first reaction was, Crummy has left his arm out there. He's asked for trouble right in front of Liam Gordon. And it doesn't matter how much theatrics there might be in the way that Hegarty hit the ground. I think he gave himself trouble by the way that he went into that tackle.
You're right, yeah. And as I think Brendan Cummins was on commentary and he made a good phrase and said that the elbow was beyond the line of his body, you could say.
Mm.
So there was a slight degree of intent, that's perceived intent, should I say. Like, obviously he didn't mean to go and just completely elbow check Hegarty in the head, but he left the elbow out. And it's, if you call it a trailing elbow, call it a leading elbow, whatever you want to call it, the fact of the matter is you're playing with fire, Will, when you start doing them kind of actions, unfortunately, you know. And like, the things happen so quick that I don't think Crummy had the time to check off his right foot and see, can he get Hegarty into his chest, you know, or let Hegarty come into Crummy's chest. It happened so quick. So the natural reaction, or maybe even reflex action rather, was to have the elbow. And so despite the level of perceived, you know, contact, you're still playing with fire and you're still kind of hoping the officials, you know, didn't catch sight of it, got the wrong angle. But if they did, they're gone, you know. And even Grace is beside me and we watched it again today. And she saw the incident. We saw the incident. She goes, no way. She goes, Hegarty, get up. And I said, stop it. Wait for the replay. Like, so you can see the elbow go out and he clock his chin. So whether you nick his chin or bury his chin, that is sign of intent, let's say, albeit minimal contact. And yeah, you can talk about the way Hegarty went down, but I just don't think, I think that's kind of a defense mechanism for Crummy, whereas in my mind, it's irrelevant, lads. You know, and I think when he looks back himself, and even you can tell by his body language, sometimes when people do,
I think he knew. You saw his face, like he was almost went a yard past. He was like,
he put the hand up when he knew.
He put the right hand up and he goes, oh. So he's like, internally, he's going, fuck. Do you know what I mean? He's going, I'm seriously bothered here. So that's where you can see some of the Dublin players in start going over to Hegarty, the referee, trying to get a bit of an influence onto the officials, which I'm all for that. I'm all for that as a teammate, don't get me wrong. But in the same breath, Crummy knew. He knew himself, you know what I mean? And then when he was up the steps, he put the hand up. He did the face, put the hand up. So I think if you ask him this morning, he'll admit that, you know, he deserved it. Now, are they going to appeal it? I have it in my notes. There's no grounds for appeal, to be honest, lads. You know, the evidence, the video evidence there is as clear as day, to be fair. And you can't, the only mitigating measure that someone could potentially point towards is the level of contact was minimal. But still, the elbow's out, the intent is there. So I think across the board, any hurling person knows that's a red.
Okay. Murph, you're nodding. Are you thinking this is red?
Well, sure. Look, in black and white terms, it's the letter of the law. It's a red card. In his defense, what I would say is that anything less than that isn't a red card. Like, it's on the very lighter end of it. Like, I mean, he wasn't going to take anyone's head off. And I'll put it this way. Tony Kelly hitting Adam English in the Gaelic grounds that he got a yellow for, like, that's more of a red for me than this. But like, the arm was out. Like, he made Liam Gordon make a tough decision. The arm was out. He hit Garrod Hegarty in the head with it. But like, if we were to go and grade them in terms of levels of these things and really get into it, if he makes less contact with him, like, as in, you know, if it's such a glance, it's not going to do savage damage. But look, letter of the law, it's a red card. It's unfortunate for him. And like we said, when he put the hand up, he nearly didn't want to turn around to look at the referee, because he was like, oh, like, he knows where we're at in hurling at the moment, that this qualifies as a red. And the other thing I'll say is, like, you know, the one Keane Kenny's one on Kieran Joyce in Páirc Uí Chaoimh during the league, that was more of a red card than this one, do you know? And like, that's just I just put it in context, because I'm looking at Chris Crummy now going, he's not going to play in an All-Ireland semi-final most likely because they won't get the appeal off. Like, I mean, he's not really going to get the appeal off. If Alan Tynan didn't get off his one when he didn't make contact, you know, Chris Crummy isn't going to get off this one, do you know?
Mark, can I ask you, I think it's rare. Referees, I think, with regards to red cards, always have a decision to make.
Yeah.
It's very, very rare you see a stonewall red card like the one you had with, was it Benny Dunn and Tommy Walsh?
Yep.
So that was, I don't know what year that was, lad, right? And I know it's gone back a while, but that one stands out to me like stonewall red card. Everyone's agreed, everyone's aligned, right? 9 times out of 10 red cards nowadays, there's a decision to make and there's somewhat a bit of a debate around it.
Yeah.
Isn't there, in fairness? So I think when you have like, them types of decision whereby it still can be opinionated, if you have to go by the letter of the law, then so when you use that phrase by the letter of the law, that's all you can apply. That's what Dean Gordon is applying. That's what I think was a Kennedy, the linesman on that side. So elbows raised, contact to the head, red card gone. And I do think if there's any kind of referees, you know, marksmen or officials were kind of whatever you call the referees board or what you call it, will in the stands looking at that, and they had the ability to look at that in hindsight or in a replay, and Liam Gordon didn't send him off, there'd be ramifications, I'd imagine.
I think so. I think the CCCC would have definitely been recommending a suspension for that if that was the case. So I don't know if we got to talk about that a few weeks back, and it's not to get off the beaten track here, but I did go and ask a couple of referees how that works. And effectively, the members of that committee can recommend something that they've seen. So it can be a clip that they see online. It can be the Sunday game. If they spot it, they can go back and look at the footage and recommend that a suspension would take place. So it is genuinely a panel of people that do this. That's what happens. But you're right, Skell, in that if, say, if Liam Gordon had flashed a yellow card at the weekend, they can't look at it then.
That's interesting.
It's seen that the referee has taken action. But say if he had let that go, say if it had gone by and they felt that that was just a shoulder that went a little bit too high and caught Hegarty on the chin and Liam Gordon had waved it on, the CCCC could have recommended a suspension at that point. That's exactly what happened to in the last round game in Dublin and Galway. That's how those two bans happened, because they weren't dealt with at the time.
Queer, I just have to... I'm going to name him my brother-in-law, Thomas G. Murray, right? He's the Dublin legend, right?
Yeah.
He thinks you have it out for Dublin, okay? For reasons really? I don't know, Will, yeah.
He's Will, really?
Yeah.
So yeah. Some people, and like I've said to him before, lad, Will is so neutral. Like no, he's out for us.
He's as neutral as Switzerland, this fella. Yeah.
And he just texted me there like literally a minute ago, gentle reminder, he said. And he has this, on WhatsApp, you can highlight the message. If Will opens his mouth talking to us on Monday, I will create a Twitter and go at him.
Oh, wow. Is this the guy I met outside the Europa League final?
The big 6'8" fella.
Yeah.
Big, like, he's a Dub, like.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a behemoth.
I'd say 6'8" would identify him rather than being a Dub if he's 6'8".
Yeah. Being a Dub is irrelevant to it, really.
Yeah. After that, yeah.
Wow, I thought we were friends. He thinks I've got a thing against Dublin. There you go.
It's amazing the perception, like, you know, oh, Will is firmly against Dublin. I'm like, I don't think I've heard Will say anything bad against Dublin.
We do really need to go back through listeners, and I promise again to all Dublin fans, we will get back to the match here, but like, if we were to go back through all the, you have a bias against insert county here, I'd say we'd have most of the counties that play hurling done.
We're pretty finished. Well covered.
I don't know. I think perception-wise, we know now that Will is a perceived hate towards Dublin. Murph, I'm not sure could I actually be specific as to what you or what county you dislike. I think everyone in Clare, Waterford, Tip, Dublin, you think I hate them. I don't. But like,
whereas Murph, that's what we're saying. It's perceived bias in that you don't even know what you've said, but now you're like, you have a bias against us. But anyway. Sorry, William, Dublin.
Murph,
anyway.
Do you hate Tipperary?
I have to look to see is the house clear.
All right, so that's it. We're in agreement. It was a red card. So that left Dublin having to work particularly hard because they're a man down. The performance, Murph, from Conor Burke was just incredible. He gets 5 points in play in the end, but also felt like he was just covering every blade of grass during the game. And it seemed whenever Dublin were trying to get to that breaking ball or were trying to get to, you know, secondary possessions, he was the guy who was kind of sweeping in and grabbing it as well. It was a really good performance around the middle third from Dublin in general, but I thought he was like a tour de force across the game.
Oh, he was unbelievable, yeah. Like, just the energy of him. Like, Brian Hayes as well, since we're talking about that middle area. Like, that fella's an awful animal of a man. Like, he was just, and even, like, we were watching it here, and I was just going, the ground he's covering, and the point he got in the second half, he potted up just underneath Cusick stand on the 45. Like, at that stage, I was going, is this fella still going? Like, he's just an unbelievable engine, great hurler. But Conor Burke, kind of back into the team as well. Like when Donal Burke stepped out there for a while, and Conor Burke was really the stalwart to kind of took the charge from the middle of the field, really. Like, I mean, that's he's been moved around a small bit, but mostly we know him as being a midfielder. That's his greatest day in the Dublin jersey. And when Crummie got sent off, like, they needed a few lads really taking the charge to Limerick. And like, he was the man who stood up and like, got a few huge scores, really important times, and looked just so confident on the ball. You know, when we talk about, we spoke in the preview last week of Dublin against Galway, that they were just dropping balls at different times where they thought there was going to be a score on, they dropped and so on. But I think the Dublin players fed off the execution of what he was doing. So, like, he'd get the ball in hand, taking on lads, popping balls over the bar. Everything was on the front foot. I really think that they fed off that. Not just with him. There's plenty of players doing it. But I just felt that his attitude, like, when they needed leaders, really, he was absolutely outstanding. And there's, like, I don't know how much more I could say about him in terms of a single standalone performance, how much better he could have done at the middle of the field. He was just outstanding. He deserves full credit for it.
Skelly, had to up the game generally. And look, sometimes this happens when a team goes down to 14. It's almost like you have to add those extra few percent yourself to try and make up for the guy who's not on the pitch. And you know, it becomes more difficult because Limerick then, they kind of use Sean Finn as the extra man for a while, but certainly they felt like they were going to use an extra defender to kind of protect the house and then just sweep out. You have to work that bit harder then at that stage against like an incredible team like Limerick, who were so renowned for their work rate. But Dublin upped it big time at that point.
They did, and like Murph, you're right about Conor Brooke. Let's say he found himself in great positions, and like he got 5 points. You know, Adam English got 5 points, but who was the more, you know, I suppose, you know, who had more of an impression on the team? It was Conor Brooke. Let's say he was doing a lot more than shooting in the sense that where he was showing up. So The point being there, right, is when the spare man was developed and Chris Crummie went off, Dublin are automatically our centre back. Okay, so that means that you're bringing back centre back. Okay, So that means Limerick didn't have a spare man in the back. For this, I was very surprised with Limerick that they didn't shove up, you know, either shove on, let's say, a Kyle Hayes type person into a midfield, shove out into a new six, put Dan Morrissey out to six, or someone out to a six position, whereby you can have an extra man around the middle where Dublin, you know, were getting their energy. So Dublin weren't creating, watching it, they weren't killing you inside the 13 and 15 corners. All the damage was done through positions 5 through 9, you know, and then you had supporting cast in 10, 11, 12. That was the area that's where Dublin got ascendancy. And they found their energy because they were allowed to break pace. You remember we were talking about before the Galway game? My concern was the pace in which Dublin had, that they could run through this Galway team. That's why The Galway wing forwards had to be deep, 10 and 12, to cut off those channels. They did that in Parnell Park, whereas Limerick didn't. They didn't the last day. And it wasn't a case of, you know, how bad Limerick played. Like, Limerick scored 28 points. No problem there. It's very surprising to say this, right? Limerick's defensive setup let them down big time. Dublin got 224 lads and had 16 wides, 44 shots total. You know, that's defensive issues for Limerick. And I just couldn't get over how they didn't push up an extra man into the midfield and make Dublin mark a third man.
Yeah.
You know, because so like, obviously, Dublin were down a man in their forwards. Now, get your sweeper, right, or get your spare man. Shove them out up into the middle of the pitch, and then Dublin, let's say, are down a man straight away. Now, they have to put out another forward. Are you with me? Mm. I just couldn't get over it. And the big note I have here is that Dublin obviously offered up the puck out. They said, Limerick, go short there. And Limerick's second phase puck out was horrendous.
Yeah,
I mean, it was catastrophic. And in particular instances, I have, you know, the second phase of passing was poor, caused four points conceded from minutes 30 to 35 before half time.
Yeah.
That was when there was a bit of parity. And bear in mind now, when Crummie went off, Crippen here, I think it was 7-5 in terms of score.
Mm.
Yeah. And there was some commentary from Darren Maloney saying, I think they outscored Limerick like 6-2 since Crummie went out, whatever it was, you know.
They did. I think that was up until the 31st, the 32nd minute. I remember him saying that.
The thin points weren't inside the Limerick 21. They were outside the 65. So the damage was being done around the middle. So that's why it was so surprising to me to see that. How you could see what the damage has been done in front of you. And like a team like Dublin, when you allow them to run and, you know, basically express themselves in the energetic manner in which they did, they're a very hard team to stop, You know, they're a very hard team to stop. And so when you kept your sweeper back and all your shooting was coming from long, the sweeper was nullified. He was completely nullified. It became a situation where there was numerical parity out in the middle of the field and Dublin had the ascendancy all day. And we didn't see the same level of tackling efficiency like we grew accustomed to from Will O'Donoghue, Hegarty, Morrissey, because just Dublin were playing around them. They were playing on them with such pace and such vigour that you couldn't touch them. The pace that Hayes has and Burke had, you know, you just couldn't get near them. Even Ronan Hayes, he was a ferocious handful in the half hour lane when he came out. And like the contributions they made, look at the goals, just direct running, like as hard as you can, pop a ball to an oncoming runner. And the lads who received the passes were ahead of the ball. So it's any attacking team for kids, right? If you're running straight at the goal and you've a lad ahead of the ball and you pass to him, the whole thing opens up. Do you know what I mean? That just shows complete intent from the Dublin forward unit to get forward and not be worried about having numeric disadvantage up the far side. They got forward, goals. You know, so it was an amazing feat from Dublin. I was pleasantly surprised because that kind of... Yeah, look, we all called the Limerick game to win by quite a margin. I did anyway. But when you're watching that game live, it's a great feeling to watch it live, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's exciting. Like, it puts you on the edge of your seat. It adds intrigue. It adds a bit of vigour to the game where we thought it was a dead fixture. Personally speaking, I thought the second fixture would be closer, but the first fixture was where all the the bells and whistles were, and it was fantastic for the game. Like what Dublin are going to do in the next round? Because I haven't got a clue. I don't know what's going to happen now. Like, can they replicate that? You know, and the word I always use in terms of teams going forward is Cork have now been forewarned, so they've seen where Dublin get a lot of their energy. So, and like that, Cork, they've plenty of place and fitness to kind of match that for Dublin. So it's a tough task ahead, but they don't give a shit today. They're waking up this morning absolutely delighted.
Ah, it's brilliant. Yeah.
After knocking off, you know, in my opinion, possibly the greatest team of all time. You know, knocking them out. So it's like, regardless of what's coming down the tracks in 2 weeks' time, fuck it. You're waking up just a happy person this morning. Yeah. As is every day. And fair play to you.
That might win a few Dublin people back. That's just me who has the bias against Dublin, it seems. the finish by Heddington for his goal, by the way, Murph. And I know when he came in, he gave Limerick such a different thing to think about. There were so many times they were like, we're going to go direct. And he would scramble to try and get his own ball after some of the Limerick players were kind of struggling to deal with just his physicality and size. But the finish for the goal is remarkable. So again, to use one of Skell's phrases, Nicky Quaid is one of the best to ever do it. You got to hit your shot remarkably well if you're going to beat him. But particularly to beat him from that kind of tight angle across the goal as well. And hit it with that type of pace. That was ridiculous.
Where's the start, though, Will? Started with Sean Brennan giving an unreal puck out.
That's true.
Did he score that type of goal against Wexford on the turn?
Against Wexford, yeah.
Yeah, he did.
So he takes up those positions, yeah.
But even, like, you're dead right in everything you said there, Will. But, like, for the hand that he strikes off as well, or the side he strikes off, like, he strikes off the end closest to the sideline, or close to the end line, which narrows the angle he's even firing at as well. So he probably had, as in, if you were standing in his position, the angle of the goal that you'd be looking at would probably be about a yard wide, like, not much more than that. And then you have Nicky Quaid standing in front of you.
She's more
like,
I
was probably being generous there. So
what he's looking at there, right, is just the body width of Nicky Quaid.
Yeah. So going high.
That means he has to go above his shoulder. And where does he go? Above his shoulder.
It was a great finish. And you were kind of hoping, like, they were going down. Like, at that stage, it was the 51st minute, I think it was. Adam English is after getting a point. Limerick are now ahead. You're there going... I'll hold my hands up. I was like, okay, that's Limerick in front now. They're going to kick on. Like, Adam English was punching the air after he got that point, and there was space as well. Like, I mean, he was conscious that they created the space. He got the point. And I was just going, right, this is it then. Ball goes down and Heatherton gets it, roofs it into the net, comes back down, unbelievable catch down the backs for Dublin, work it back out, long ball, straight onto Hedgehog again, and breaks down. But the thing is about it for the second one, is you look at Keane O'Sullivan running onto it. There's, like, Limerick still have the spare man. Like, and for a lot of the game, I had to keep reminding myself, Dublin are down a man here. Like, you had to remind yourself of that. It looked like they had 16 men, not 14. But ball breaks, and you look at Dermot Burns and a few lads, and they're standing looking. And, like, they should, like, if everybody has a man marked, they still have a spare man. So why Keane O'Sullivan gets to break through onto that ball and hang it up in the net, like, never mind, gets it into the hand, there's still no one tackling him at that stage. Like, that to me showed so much of, you know, where kind of Limerick were at. And I'll be honest, I've been part of teams that have been there too as well. You know, I've been there where we turned up and I put it down to just kind of you didn't tune into the game properly, you didn't prepare for the game properly. But all over the field you could see it. And I'm probably getting back to the point that Skettle was making there just before, where we're saying in the first half, like, I wrote down a list of points that I was looking at of where I was going, how Dublin's attitude was much better than Limerick's, and where Limerick will be looking at this game when they look back at it. And I would say they look back at it through the same lens that we would look back against Galway in 2012, where we go, you know, we left a lot behind us there, where our attitude, granted Galway came at brilliance and Dublin came at brilliance yesterday, but we didn't bring any sort of attitude towards it. A few of the points that I picked up, like 26th minute, Ronan Hayes gets a point, right? But the ball lands in past the 21-yard line. There's three Limerick players, Nicky Quaid, Kyle Hayes, and I don't remember who the other defender was, but there's hesitation. Neither of them run for it. And then Kyle Hayes decides, right, I'll go, picked it up. Hits it too far down the field. Paddy Doyle picks it up. Back into Ronan Hayes, over the bar. And I just looked and said, that's not really what Limerick do. Like, that's not symptomatic of them. Under no pressure, Kyle Hayes hits it too far. Then Conor Brooks point in the 30th minute, brushes off Adam English, and there's no tackler after that. He puts it over the bar. Now, Conor Brooks does really well. He pushes through, but we're used to seeing Limerick with another layer of players coming and hitting the player in possession. That just wasn't there. If I go then as far as Conor McHugh's point in the Limerick goes short in the 33rd minute. I think they could have given it to Sean Finn or someone, but the ball goes long. Conor McHugh catches it over Tom Morrissey. And he kind of looks out to see, is there anyone free? No one free. So he solos up the field towards the left half forward position. Nobody's coming at him. Nobody's coming tackling him. Pops the ball off. Dublin put the ball over the bar. And I just said, like, we don't associate that with Limerick. Like, you know, and I'm not taking away from Dublin here. Dublin only played what were in front of them. But so many times the Dublin attitude was just, light years ahead of him. And I think the one that probably typified where both teams were at was Sean Curry's point in the 46th minute. Cathal O'Neill wins the ball, he's running down towards left corner forward, Dublin come out and hit him, and they dispossess him, or they don't dispossess him, the ball breaks down, Cathal O'Neill goes to feed it back, hits it back out over a Limerick player, and then Sean Curry picks it up, goes up the field and pops it over the bar. Like, these were enforced errors by Dublin, definitely, but at the same time, the indecision out of Limerick, we haven't seen that in a long time. So there's both. It's not to take away from what Dublin did, but you can see elements there of that's not the Limerick we know, but that doesn't concern Dublin. Dublin can only play what's in front of them, and again, like, fully deserved in everything they did.
Yeah, getting those two goals in such quick succession was such a big lift of energy at a time when I think Dublin needed it, because definitely Limerick were turning the screw at the time. The other one that was a big lift, Skell, because goalkeepers union here, was Brennan's save from Gillan's shot, which is just, to me, is an incredible save. We talked about Carl Dunne up the other end, the double save, which is a little bit different in the Joe McDonagh Cup final, but down the canal end at the other end, like, this is a killer. This is Gillan with the ball in his hand, game on the line. You're thinking from that type of range, you back Gillan to score every single time. Brennan makes himself very hard to get past, and when that ball ends up over the bar rather than under it, it's just such a crucial moment in the game.
It's massive right now. I'm saying this from a goalkeeper perspective, and I say this to our forwards all the time. Okay, look at the replay with the shot behind the goal, right? So first of all, Brennan does everything right. Comes, closes the angle as best he can, makes his body as big as he can. At the end of the day, his body is about 3 foot wide, 4 foot wide, maximum, okay? The goal is 21 foot wide. If Aaron Gillan looks at that shot again, he'd say, what was I doing? You know what I mean? Slicing the hurl off his right to go to the far corner. If he puts it lower down, it's a goal. If he puts it low, it's a goal. Like, you know? So for me, is that a bad shot or a good save? Which is it? For you guys, I'm asking you guys. I know my opinion. Is it a bad shot or a good save?
I think it's a bad shot selection by Gillan, but I think it's an incredible save.
Terrible shot. Sorry. Horrendous shot, right? But Brennan did everything he was supposed to do. He did everything he was supposed to do. And at the end of the day, I tell goalkeepers, all you can do is make yourself look as big as you can and hope it hits you. Hope it hits you. Do you know what I mean? So he hoped it hit him. The ball hit him. In terms of the shot, I'm always saying to our forwards, put the ball on the deck. You know what I mean? You take the hope out of it, right? So, like, we've seen these types of shots from players before where, you know, you're thinking it's a certain three-pointer. It's going to have a massive, massive impact on the game. And next thing, poor shot selection, saved. And just you could just feel the tidal wave. And when he comes out, Brennan, and he raises both arms in the air, you're like, ooh, this is Dublin's day. No, this is Dublin's day, because those kind of incidents, you know, they don't occur every day. You know, that could be the last time Brennan makes a save, listen to me, in his career of that magnitude. And you might be thinking, why are you talking about? But those types of saves in context in those type of games, they don't happen very often.
But it's like Nicky Quaid's one against Cork in 2018, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, in terms of, like, even not say even the manner of how it, like, how important it was to a team. Like, it's the save of the year so far. I think, well, okay, I know people maybe argue in the Joe McDonagh final, absolutely, but in terms of the magnitude of it, if you're going magnitude alone, very hard to find something like that.
I do agree. You can take out all the technical elements of it, right? You can take out the issues with the shot selection, but the fact that he saved it, did what he was supposed to do, put the body in the line. In a game of that magnitude for Dublin, it was a colossal save.
Yeah. You
know? And all it did was give huge confidence. Like, if you're playing these big teams, you've got to keep clean sheets. You know, if they're going to be shooting the lights out, hitting 28 points with X amount of ways, you've got to keep clean sheets. If that goal goes in, and, you know, and that kind of was, I think, to be fair, that, you know, do or die ahead you was epitomised by the Dublin defence throughout.
Yeah.
Particularly in the second half, whereby you can just see numerous elements whereby you see Smith, Bellew, you know, just diving in front of lads and hoping the ball hits them, and it does. You know what I mean? And so when you have the honest intent and endeavour to put everything you have and cover that goal, more often than not, it works for you. More often than not, it works for you. So when you have that decision made, I'm going to protect this goal with everything I have, it'll work for you. Even if sometimes, you know, in the grand scheme of things, more often it works for you. Whereas I agree with you, Murph, that the Limerick situation, the defending, it just wasn't like Limerick. It wasn't like them. The second goal is very disappointing from a Limerick perspective. You know, we never see that kind of breaking ball turn into a goal damage. And, you know, it's two men up. Like, Morrissey and Murphy go up together, Murph. You know, there's a bit of confusion there. And there's an allowance in for the spare man to get in and get at it. It's just, you've seen, you know, teams chose one of two methods against Limerick over the years. They chose A, to push up, or B, drop off. And when they dropped off and tried to send in high ball into Limerick, Limerick just used to mop it up day in, day out. You used to have Finn, Morrissey, who were just completely imperious in the high ball. And just that kind of feeling of imperiousness was gone. It just wasn't there yesterday. Like, we Limerick only caught clean. I can only picture two or three elements or two or three instances in the game, even with a spare man at the back, that Limerick caught clean. Mm. Now, you can correct me here, but I can't remember any more than that. You know what I mean? So it's like that level of aerial dominance just seems to have evaporated. And I think that started with Cork last year, to be fair. Do you know what I mean? With that long, long ball. But like Dublin, you know, they're the type of team, I think, like the first 10 or 15 minutes is crucial, okay? And then when they were 7-5 down, I was thinking to myself, when Crummy was gone off, that's it now. They can't find energy anywhere else. They won't be able to find it because they won't have the numbers. Mm-hmm. And then it's like when they say a man goes down in the scrum, the other 7 just push harder. The other 14 just pushed harder. They just did. Mm-hmm. They did what, I don't believe what they were capable themselves, what they thought themselves were capable of doing. Like, I don't think, I'd love to hear someone just be honest at the end of the year. Just be really truthfully honest. When Crummy goes off, was there any Dublin players that said, we're definitely going to win this or we're in trouble here? You know, I bet you it was more towards the latter as opposed to the former.
I would say, to be honest to him, like, I think if they mentally bent a knee at that stage, though, I don't think they would have won it. Like, I think at the very minimum, they didn't say to themselves, they're beaten. Does that make sense to differentiate what you're saying? Like, I don't think they were saying to themselves, we're definitely going to win this game. But at the same time, I think if 15 or 14 players, as it was, go, ah, geez, we're in bother here, I think that manifests itself on the field. So
I do, but the opportunity, yeah. So like, you know, if a leg goes off and he's in a central position, like centre back, right, that's the time to grab them by the throat and just choke them out. Yeah. So that next 10 or 15 minutes, just choke it out, and then Dublin will have no choice but to, you know, nearly bend the knees, you said. But like, it was 7-5, and then, you know, it goes 7-6, 7-7, 8-7, 8-8, 8-9. You know what I mean? Like, it just, they just kept tick-tacking. So that next 10 minutes was all the evidence Dublin needed to say, we're still in this list.
Well, they were level 7 times, but they went ahead by 5 points after Crummy got sent off. Yeah. I think, to sum up what the feeling, I'd say the feeling of Dublin in general, I know what I would feel if I saw that, is once Crummy has got sent off, I'd say there was a collective bollocks on the field, just going, ah, oh, Jesus, we're in bother here now. Or they just went, okay, but they didn't drop the heads. Like, they were the better team afterwards. And the funny thing about it is, this is maybe a controversial point to say, and it's nothing to do with Chris Crummy, but if, like, a player getting sent off for Dublin at that stage, I think compounded the fact that if every one of you do not work hard, you're definitely not winning this game. Like, do you know, does that make sense? Where they were forced with no other option but to go, you have to go absolutely hell for leather here. Now, whereas, you know, when there's 15 and 15, you're maybe not forced with that issue. Do you know, you often see that where there's a hop or there's a little bounce from a team who will get a man sent off and they up their work rate as a collective group because they're very aware they're down a man on the field. So, you know, it's an interesting point for people to tease out, to say, does, if Dublin, regardless if it's Crummy, if it's Ronan Hayes, if it's anyone else, if they get sent off, if Dublin don't have a player sent off, do they go ahead by 5 points then? Because they were hurling great, yeah, absolutely. But there's that psychological question to be answered there that we'll never be able to answer, but it's interesting.
Yeah, I was hoping for them that some of the wides in the first half weren't going to come back to haunt them as well, because there's this feeling they had left a few chances behind and probably should have been like in a better position even at halftime. And maybe that was me just being tempered by the fact that Limerick are so good at coming back and playing in second halves, that it was always in the back of my mind. At every point in the second half, I thought, right, Limerick are just going to click. It's just going to come into gear and they're going to pull away, and we'll be talking on the pod on Sunday night about the fact that Dublin have left this massive chance behind them. And by God, didn't they play well when they went down to 14 men, but this Limerick team find a way to win. Something I was wondering about as well, Skell, was this decision that they made, which was to move Hayes out from the position where he's been so good this year. They put Declan Hannon in at 6. Dublin ran at them. Like, the minute that Hayes moved, that channel became a problem. Now, this is not me trying to write off any of the older Limerick players or anything like that, but I'm just wondering, if the change was to take place, should the change have taken place almost directly after the red card rather than later in the game, because they had made that decision to go with the 3-on-2 at the back? Like, I just thought when they moved Hayes out at 6, that actually gave incentive for Dublin to run through them.
Yeah, that's a very tough question to answer, to be fair. And I think sometimes in games, this, like, say, especially when you're a man up, it's a horse for a course with.
Yeah,
and I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the Limerick management, saying, what were they potentially, what kind of picture were they trying to paint? What were they thinking? And I think they probably thought, you know, we have an extra man at the back. Declan Hannon would be a good guy to get a bit of experience on, keep a calm show at hand, and try and kind of turn the tide a little bit here. But I do believe that, like, there just wasn't enough minutes in Declan Hannon's legs and arms this year. You know, to my memory, I think, and I could be open to correction, he played a very, very minor bit in the championship up to the point where he came on at extra time in the Munster final, and that's the size of it, you know. So has he played a collective hours hurling this year? I don't know. Someone will correct me, but, you know, my point still stands in that there wasn't enough minutes in, and now you're playing a game, you know, in a pitch the size of Croke Park with a team like Dublin, who have just athletes in positions 5 through 12. So they're coming at you with complete pace. And I think the cover was gone too. So we've grown accustomed to Willard, or that's right, to Declan Hanlon being the six, always going back, picking up ball off the full back, always being covered by one of his midfielders. You know, Willard, I don't know who type person, I don't know, that just wasn't there yesterday. You know, it just wasn't there. So that means that the call was still to keep Kyle Hazen at number six. So was that the losing of the game? I don't think so. Was it an issue for them in the second half? Yes, it was. In my opinion, it was. Now, I haven't watched anything since in terms of Sunday games analysis, so I don't know what they've said. But in my view, looking at it, it seems like that there was the decision to drop off or push up wasn't corrected. The wrong decision was made. For me, it's when you have numerical parity, everybody pushes up that. Everyone pushes right up, you know, and you make that extra number go as far out the pitch as possible if that type of game is being played. So Dublin were playing it between the 250s, if you want to call it that. Even further out, to be honest, lads. You know, like look where the likes of Curry picked up the ball, and Ronan Hayes and Whiteley and these lads. They picked up very deep towards their own goal. So that means the game has been played out there. So that's where you want more numbers, in my opinion. But I just don't think it was in his legs and arms this year, Will. You know what I mean? I don't think so. Mm. And like if that game was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I still think, you know, he would have been under pressure because the cover wasn't there. You know, I'd have kept Hayes at six myself, to be honest. Mm. And the question I was asking when I saw it in real time is, where is the likes of, you know, Barry Nash coming off? Where is Colin Coughlin gone? What was like is a guy who was getting an awful lot of minutes in the half back line for Limerick over the years as kind of the next as probably the seventh defender, if you know what I mean, or eighth defender. Yeah. So I don't know. Questions to be asked. I'm sure they'll sit down, like, because like as good and all as a management team they are, everyone still makes mistakes. And like that game was errors on behalf of the players and maybe one or two in the management. They'll collectively come together and try fix it again. But if there was a couple of big decisions that didn't go their way, and also not from the referee but themselves, and also some of their general play, like Murphy, you highlighted a lot in there. I fully agree with you. Some of the points Dublin got was I have to say the fault of Limerick. It wasn't the making of Dublin, it was the fault of Limerick. And like I could just picture Cotter Neal three times. I can picture him giving the ball away, turnovers, 2-3 points. And it's like that kind of stuff is so, you know, I suppose, far away from the Limerick of that we grow accustomed to, isn't it? We never see them do that. We always see them being so careful with the ball, so accurate, never dropping ball, touch always imperious, you know, loads of energy around the middle. And it just didn't seem there. And like, it wasn't because Limerick just didn't have the legs or the wherewithal or the want. It's just that they were bet by a better team. That's it. Dublin came to play. And they played better, and that's the size of it. And like sometimes, and I've said this before, and like we said it together collectively, there's times you come into games, and if you're not ready for the fight and you get hit, it's like, Jesus, it takes you a long time to recover.
Yeah.
You're on the ropes. And all that being said, there was 2 points in the mixer, and Limerick had goal chances. Do you know what I mean? To try and think it.
Yeah.
So it's not as if there was a million miles between it. My like in terms of the Galway Tipperary game, which we'll touch on, there was a million miles in that. But in this game, I won't say it's bad and all, but it's off Limerick were, you know, and it's on Limerick, Dublin were, it was still a close game.
That Gallant shot goes in, it's probably a different result. The free at the end, if say that ends up getting roofed as opposed to all the Dublin players getting back and collectively getting in to make a series of blocks, Limerick win the game and we're having such a different conversation. Got over the line job.
Question, maybe I'm reading this wrong, right? Was that a 21-yard free? At the end.
That was a more than a 21-yard free.
So, it was a bit further, yeah.
Why wasn't there? This is the point I want to ask you, right? And I look at people for listening, they do it anyways. If there's like a 23-yard free, a 24-yard free, you'll often have the opposition would place someone in front of the keeper in front of the goals. It was a clear path. There was nobody, no Limerick lad in front of the goalkeeper's site.
Oh, yeah, Limerick lad. I was thinking, I thought you were going to say Dublin. Yeah, yeah, no, it's a fair point. I suppose they just wanted to not have it congested where the ball might randomly then hit that one Limerick player as opposed to, probably didn't have a plan for it, Skell. That's basically the point, is that, like, if you're going to do that, you have a plan for it whereby player X, you stand in front of it, but then you're going to run out of the way at the last minute. But, like, if you don't have a plan and you put a player in there, you might end up striking the ball at the player and you only end up causing more. But I'm trying to think now, and actually something I didn't make a note of. Wasn't there a black card, a potential black card offence? I'm going to say
instant, yeah.
Carl O'Neill's. Definitely, I looked at that. Like, I mean, that's a black card. Full stop.
That was
one where I was going for the Limerick supporters, and I was just thinking that was why the black card was brought in. So, like, I mean, in terms of getting breaks that way, like if that goes in, if that's a penalty, yeah. Here, Sean Brennan might have saved it. Who's to know? But I do wonder, it was like the black card was a thing for a while there that we were going, you know,
it's
mad about.
So out of vogue at this stage, Mark.
It's gone
like,
now.
When it first came in, we had these all the time. And we were debating the one particularly at the Gaelic Grounds and, you know, how far out that was and whether it was actually a clear goal scoring opportunity and all that. Seems the black card is just totally forgotten about it. I agree with you, by the way. My first instinct was it was black on the first watch, and I rewatched it last night, and I thought that was definitely a black card.
Mm. It was exactly what the rules brought in, you know? So, yeah, it is one where they can feel hard done by with that one. And again, this game, obviously, we want to, you know, give all credit to Dublin and all that. But in tight games, no more than if it's Cork and Limerick or if it's Kilkenny and Tip or whoever, when we're trying to figure out where the game, where the scales was tipped in favour of another team, not deliberately or whatever, but just that if those decisions go a different way, you're thinking, well, Limerick maybe stumble over the line. It's not pretty, but they fall over the line. But when it was in their own hands, the other thing I'll say is when it's in their own hands with Limerick, I'm thinking, like, you know, 68, 69 minutes, they're 4 points down. You know, there's 4 minutes of added time. There's 5 minutes left altogether, let's say, if it's in the 69th minute. They started going for goals. And I was like, that's not Limerick. Like, you know, when Limerick get a ball, they are usually so conscious that, you know, 5 minutes on the clock and we need 4 points. We can get those 4 points. But when they started to force the issue, I felt that actually suits Dublin a little bit more because they're going to congest these areas. If you get a ball through that, okay, you get a ball through. But if they manage just to get a foot to it, a knee to it, a block, anything at all, and it breaks down, that's what happened. They managed just to get those blocks. Garrod Hegarty, another one I thought of, like Garrod Hegarty going through for his shot in at a time, I think it was, you know, for that free came off it. Shane O'Brien was outside him. You know, he could have drawn the man and popped it. On another day, he draws the man, he pops it, and Shane O'Brien has the shot. But I think because the seeds of panic had been sown, he goes for the shot, and the shot wasn't on. Do you know, so there's so many of those things there where, again, I'll harp back to my own experience. I've been there where lads make decisions that aren't normally their decisions because you're now panicking.
Pressure.
Yeah, it's all pressure. It's all pressure, yeah.
Yeah, you wanted to find someone who knew that it was going to be a Dublin win. Dennis J. Collins, who's listening in the United States, sent us an email last night. Hi, Will, Murphy and Liam Skell. Listened to your podcast last night. I was quietly telling myself I didn't see Limerick running away versus Dublin. I'll tell you why. Limerick haven't won a Saturday game in the last 5 years, based off memory. They lost to Clare in 2023 on a Saturday, lost to Cork twice, 2024 and 2025, albeit a draw in the Munster final. Lost to Kilkenny in the league in a semi-final in 2023 and lost to Dublin in 2025, all on Saturdays. And am I right in saying, just to add to Dennis's point there, wasn't 2019 the semi-final? Was that the Saturday semi-final as well?
Absolutely it was, yeah.
I knew you
went for points the following day. yeah, great point from Dennis. It's an interesting one, but it's like saying every time I've had steak the night before a Limerick match, they lose. It doesn't make a difference. Like, you know, as in it's a Saturday. It's an interesting point, but doesn't play into it. But fair play to him. I would say, did he say this out loud to people that this Limerick are going to lose this match because it's Saturday? If he did, it counts. If he doesn't, if he didn't.
It's an email. After
I had my own little stat then as well. I told you about this before. I think I haven't seen it anywhere. And maybe some of the news writers can put it under paper tomorrow. Is it the first time in 15 years that Limerick have lost three championship games in a row? And I know people will say they didn't lose the Munster final in all the time. But the McMackie Cup is down below in Cork. They lost it. So that's three. That's Clare, Cork. And so just as a point, 15 years, you know. I think if you...
Oh, Murph.
What?
If you're looking for that grenade I want off you, you've just thrown it. You've just put it in, you've thrown the grenade.
I'm just saying, some people are saying, you know, they're defending it, saying, it's like saying, well, sure, Clare didn't win the All-Ireland last year because it was a draw at full time. Clare won the All-Ireland, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, as in, it was a draw at full time, but there was more hurling done after that. So, but no, it's just an interesting point, I just think. I think it's interesting because I came up with it. So
it also just goes to how bloody good they've been over the last decade of it as well.
You say it with such a neutral tone as well. Like, so
Edwina on Instagram, just to show the variety of feedback that came in after last night, was on pretty much straight after the game finished. So, mass congratulations to Dublin, Anthony O'Callaghan, his backroom team today. Fantastic win for them and well deserved. Question for the pod, which is something we were just kind of touching on a little bit in a few minutes ago. Limerick didn't use the spare man correctly. When you've got a player like Barry Nash, he might have been a better player to be the spare man than Finn, who was more of a natural man marker. Also, I feel the physical toll of the Munster Championship took more out of Limerick than we maybe expected at the time. They seemed a little bit flat coming out of the game. Just an observation, that shouldn't take anything away from Dublin. I thought they were magnificent. The result is great for hurling in general, and albeit I'm a disappointed Limerick fan, I have to give credit to Dublin on this one. Edwina's point might be a good one, though, because Kylie did say afterwards that, you know, They took a bit of time after the Munster final. That had taken quite a bit of a toll. Dublin were obviously getting ready for something totally different, which was the Kildare match that focused the mind. He played a primary quarter final. He was keen to point out that training was good last week. But it can be a case of you just have a lot of, you know, physical exertion from the last few weeks. I think at the level they got to in the first Cork game in the round robin, which is the best the Limerick have looked this year, the way what that final would have taken out of them a few weeks ago as well. Maybe it's understandable they were flat. But I have to preface that by saying I don't think any of the three of us saw a flat performance from Limerick. I thought Limerick, once they got to Croke Park, I thought they were going to kick into gear.
I wouldn't think it was anything physical, to be honest myself. Like, they've had plenty of time. They're incredible athletes. Like, these lads are in incredible shape. Absolutely, there may be one or two niggles, but we've spoken in depth about how deep this panel is. Like, if lads are feeling a little bit leggy, there's plenty of lads there. There was nothing I saw from Limerick at the weekend to say that this was down to, you know, the legs giving up or anything like that. And I have heard people say that, and I will say, was it Edwina made the point there?
Yeah.
Like, her points there are well made. And I'm not going to say I'm right either, but for me, a lot of the stuff I saw, if there was any sort of leftover residual anything after Munster final, it was emotional, I'd say, if anything. Because anything I saw at the weekend, it was, you know, there just wasn't a drive there to go and get the ball. If I saw a lad running and he just looked like he couldn't get there, I'd say, okay, that's physical. But I saw hesitancy. I saw Limerick lads not running for the ball like we used to. I'll give you the example. When they played Cork in the Munster final, Patrick Horgan gets the ball. Shane Barrett's goal. Patrick Horgan gets the ball. He's surrounded by four lads hitting him hard, and he barely gets the ball away. Ball breaks in and around the same position for Keane O'Sullivan at the weekend. He rises the ball. He looks up. He takes his steps, and he knocks into the back of the net. Nobody near him. That's not physical. I just goes back to it. Tommy, you saw us say to us, like, again, lads are probably sick of hearing me saying it, but 2012, he said, Galway came to win a game, we came to play a game. That's for me what it was, is that the attitude was that we'll have enough to get over Dublin here. And again, I say this with respect to Limerick, but I've been there myself. They came thinking that they were going to push over Dublin, and we thought they were going to push over Dublin. And I'll hold my hands up in saying that. The only people who didn't think that was Dublin. You know, they just said, we're going to have a crack here, and whatever happens, today we're going to die on our sword. And, like, for me, it just comes back to that. Like, that's the one point. If I was to pick one point from this game where I go, that's what Dublin should take from this, is that regardless what Limerick were going to come with, be it the Limerick juggernaut or be it a Limerick that are a little bit tired after the Munster final, Dublin said, well, we can do what we can do and that's all we can control. And they went out and they did it. And that's the one thing for me that kind of just makes this such an incredible win. And the reason I enjoyed it so much was that Dublin didn't listen to any of us. Dublin listened to themselves. And I think, I don't know who I saw saying that at the weekend, it's the beauty of sport, that these matches come along every so often and we just bask in them, because it's the unpredictability of it. It's the kind of the magic of it. It's the fairy tale story of it. It's all that stuff. And I've heard a lot of people say over the last 24 hours, you know, oh, Limerick, you know, the legs, it's nothing to do with Limerick's legs or anything. Maybe Limerick's attitude was that they disrespected Dublin a little bit too much, and Dublin had full respect for themselves and went out and said, let's just throw everything at this. And I think for me, that was just the beauty of the game. And I would put it completely down to Dublin more than Limerick legs giving up on them.
But sure, Murph, have Limerick, okay, I know people would point towards the Munster final as being an issue, but, you know, it's not the first time they drew a Munster final. And, like, have they ever had a Munster championship as easy? Like, when did they go into the last game a dead rubber, having already qualified?
Very fair point.
By my count here, right, the toughest game they had in the Munster Championship at the final was the tip game in the first day, where they had the draw.
Definitely, yeah.
Then they had a cakewalk around Waterford, which there was by their own standards. Do you mean? Then they had a cakewalk against Cork, to be fair, which they had in Limerick. Then they had a dead rubber against Clare. Then they had obviously a great game against Cork in the Munster final. Dublin have played a game more. You know, and the only game that I can think of memory that was relatively easy for them was the Antrim one, because the Offaly game first day out was close, Will. Galway, Wexford and Kenny, not simple against them. So it's not as if that they had a jog through to this point in time, whereas Limerick had a full sprint. So I just don't think it's fair. Now, you can argue, is that an accumulation of the years gone by? And is that mental fatigue? I don't know, potentially, maybe, possibly. Is that a reason why you're saying, Murph, that they weren't as tuned in? Did they need more of a crowd to get behind them, let's say, and kind of help facilitate that energy like they have in the Gaelic grounds? Maybe, I don't know. But physically, in terms of physical legs, I don't see it at all. The evidence says, no, it's not that at all.
Yeah. Let's leave the discussion again about where this leaves Limerick going into next year and what's going to happen. I think that can be a discussion on a different pod. It's maybe not the day for it. Tip Back, That a Fact, which has become a Twitter account I've enjoyed over the last
is that,
week.
Is that, that's the name?
That's the name of their Twitter account.
Yeah. Get.
Oh, yeah, I'm giving their official.
I thought that was a statement there, right?
No. Any tweet that starts on a Sunday morning that says, "At Will O'Callaghan, make of this information what you will," is always something that will get me to read the name, the message, right? So, All-Ireland winners who are remaining in the Lee McCarthy Championship right now: TJ Reid, Owen Murphy, Ronan Marr, Jason Ford, Noel McGrath, John McGrath, Willie Connors, Jake Morris, Michael Breen, Seamus Kennedy, Barry Hogan. There was two missing from the list, which I had to add in. One was Richie Reid. Shout out to Billy Ryan for pointing that out when he was going through his, in his mind, when I was talking to him last week, who was still left on the Kilkenny panel. But he said to him, "Oh no, Richie was a sub, he has a medal as well." So Richie Reid's one. And Liam Sheedy, very handy to have, manager of the 2019 Tipperary team, will know that Brian McGrath has an All-Ireland medal from 2019 as well. And Peter Farrell pointing out Conor McHugh has got a football one.
Conor McHugh has four football, doesn't he?
So there you go. He doesn't have a Lee McCarthy, but he's All-Ireland football medals, I should say. So there's not many left, as you can see. Even the Tipperary panel, not that many. And three from Kilkenny, Cork, looking for that 20-year gap. And unless you have a football medal in Dublin, you're not an All-Ireland hurling medal winner if you're part of that panel.
So right, was I right there, Stephen, with the timelines around each county's respective All-Ireland win?
Oh, so what do you have?
I had six for Tipperary.
Six tip, yeah. It's 10 Kilkenny.
2015 the last one.
2015 was last year, so 10 years.
Yeah, 20 for Cork.
2005.
And it's 85 for Dublin, I think.
85, is it?
As in 85 years since they won. Not 95. No.
I missed that one.
No, it's, I'm pretty sure, because I checked Scales numbers, 6, 10, 20, 85, I think, off the top of my head. Someone will say we're maybe 1 or 2 years out there, but I think that's right.
Yeah, that's great.
It's remarkable. I mean, it makes this championship so interesting. Like, don't get me wrong, I would love to have seen the trilogy between Limerick and Cork, and that story was so tempting, and a few weeks ago, the idea of them coming back and meeting at Croke Park, totally on board for that. But right now, there's part of me just kind of goes, do you know what, actually, now, I never at any point thought it was going to be tipping Kilkenny in the semi-final. We had to readjust, because everyone, let's be deadly honest here, and again, I'm sure there's a few in the Dublin camp who will disagree, would have had their little wall chart built out that was Limerick versus Kilkenny in the semi-final. You're working out, is that on the Saturday or is it going to be on the Sunday? And then on the other side, sorry, Skell, it's probably going to be Tipperary against Cork. Most of us had that in mind, I think. And now we have to go. Go on.
Sorry, will there be a full house at Cork for Dublin?
Oh, 60 quid.
I don't see. Oh, Jesus. I don't see why not. I don't see why there couldn't be. But I don't know the attitude of, let's say, does it translate over? Will the following translate over? I think it'll be very close to it. Do you know?
Yeah, it should be close to a sellout. I think there's going to be probably more people at that than Kilkenny tip.
I think.
Oh, really?
I think so. But like, I mean, you're dealing with Cork, a fan base. Cork and Dublin.
When she's Grace Nyer and Donegal on the Sunday, and we said, so. It's 3 hours and 40 minutes from where we are in the Gaelic Croke Park. Would we go to make it? I thought Kilkenny and Tip would be definitely packed.
Well, I'm just going by populations versus how many people would actually have, like, how many people are going to get to go to that. Like, Cork are now essentially favourites for the All-Ireland. Dublin, when's the next time they might see an All-Ireland semi-final?
Like, very, I mean, true.
Kilkenny's
championship starts now.
I know, but there's been times now when Kilkenny have been in semi-finals, and we've had listeners who've been on about this as well, where Kilkenny didn't travel in massive numbers. It's not the biggest county. Tipperary, I think, probably mobilised more people. But I'm also mindful, Skell, and this isn't to, you know, dovetail this nicely into the next game, but 15,000 at the Gaelic grounds.
Yeah.
At the weekend.
15,000 at the Gaelic grounds, I imagine.
Mawson tip.
Yeah. Like, when we went through, remember, it was the last week, the week previous, we went through the supporters for... You know, for the level, I suppose, the level of support that's provided by each county, you know, and I had Galway down at like 8 or 9. You know, you can see why now.
Yeah. Was there an element, though, and I appreciate the prices, by the way. So I think it was 40 for a stand ticket for the Gaelic grounds, which would have been the same price as the doubleheader in Semple Stadium. Was last year we did the doubleheader? It was last year. Mm-hmm. So you're basically getting half the value. You're getting one game as opposed to two. And 40 quid is expensive per ticket. So that is definitely a factor before we start slandering any supporters.
I get it. If you have a close affiliation to a player, remember the management, right, you're definitely going to the match, 100%. Yeah. If you're a relation, a friend, even a teammate is in your club, you're going to the match. Other supporters in and say they want something to shout about. So, you know, they want to go to a game whereby they're going to be, I suppose, A, entertained, but they want to see their team win.
Yeah. By the way, I think that's the big element in Galway.
It is.
I was there at the Offaly Galway game. Loads of Galway people went. And there was this feeling of, yeah, we're going to really kick off our summer. And there was that whole element of we want to be there. I wonder, was in Galway, some people kind of went, I don't know if we're going to win this weekend. And there just wasn't that belief it was going to happen.
I can tell you categorically there was people in Galway that said, no, Tip are going to beat us. I'm not going to that. Mm. I'm not going to waste and bring in, you know, the wife and kids and spending 200 euro and this and that and to come home and just have the same results as it's the same result as if I sat at home on the couch, you know. So I get that. But and like I, you know, maybe I'm being a bit tough on supporters coming from a player's perspective, saying why don't you all travel? But I have to, like, even from a parent's perspective, I get it. I get the financial issues that surround the game at the moment. I see the price of the tickets. It's not tough, or it is tough. Excuse me. Like, they don't get. You know.
I thought you were really going to launch into the.
No, I wasn't.
It's not tough. You should just be there.
He's launching the mothers here now.
No, it is tough because, like, not everyone gets a media pass or gets whatever. You know, and let's just be honest about, right?
Yeah.
And like, they have to fork up and park up and bring the kids. I get it. I do get it. So maybe a lot of families pick their battles. And they pick the Offaly game, or they pick a different game, and they treat it as a day out. You know, it's just disappointing all the same. You know, like if we were in Croke Park now in a month's time, the Ireland final, I guarantee there'd be a major scramble for tickets. And maybe because families would say this is the day out now, and maybe it's a milestone period in a child's life, but that day is not coming anytime soon, fellas. In terms of Ireland. So, but look, we had the same conversation on Tip 2 years ago. I mean, they didn't show up to support their own country. I can't remember who they were playing in Thurles.
Ah, sure. It was a Cork game. Liam Cal was the first one to point this out. He said earlier on this year, and he's rallied the crowd a few times, and he said, look, need you to get behind us, need you to be there with us. And now this young Tipperary team, and I think definitely it helps supporters when there's a bit of success underage as well, the minor, the 20s, it all kind of rolls together. It's this feeling that now Tipperary are building towards something. And it's remarkable, I think this is their first time back at Croker with the seniors in 6 years. And now I think so many people want to go. Yeah. It's Kilkenny, it's the black and amber, which is like a red rag to a bull for Tipperary supporters too. It's the perfect circumstance for a huge Tipperary crowd to go.
I take on everything you just said, and I agree with you about the underage success, right? And but trust me, in Galway, it doesn't exactly translate to that either. But I will say, when you have a team that operates as honest as Tip do at the moment, right? And they've said it from the outset, and you can go back to the league game against Cork. When they operate as honest as Tip do, people will get behind them, because what they want to see is a respectable level of effort. A respectable level of effort that will warrant a mother and father picking up their kids and going to the match. You know, warrant going to that extra effort. You know, so if the public are going to the effort to come and support you, at least give us your best. Give us your absolute best. And Tipperary, without question, have been doing it. And I keep pointing towards it like a broken fucking record. Go back to that Cork game when McCarthy gets sent off. We still saw it in Tipperary.
Yeah.
And we've said it numerous times about them, that we saw they kept at it and at it and at it, which shows honest endeavour. And people can latch onto that. They can latch onto that and say, right, I'm following this team. Not because I'm not supporting you, but I'm going with you on this journey, because of what you're trying to do. You know, and if you have someone who's honest, and like I keep naming him, I keep saying Jake Morris, lads. You know, Jake Morris is taking the fight for the Tipperary forwards at the moment. I know we looked at John McGrath and Jason Ford, the old dogs of the hard road, and scored about 10 or 11 points between them. But still, Jake Morris, he's that spark they need in the middle, isn't he? So like when you see that kind of level of effort being epitomized by a person who was criticised for maybe not having that work ethic or that level of physicality in his performance over the last couple of years, sure, you're going to follow them. So I can see why the public are behind them.
Two landmark things have just happened. This feels like a therapy session to a certain extent. I've said positive things about the Dublin Hurlers when apparently I have a dislike of them. And that is the most positive you've been about Tipperary in 4 years of this pod.
Hold on a second. Wait,
no. No, genuinely. Without doubt, those last 25, 30 seconds there, where you were saying this Tipperary team have given them something to get behind. The honesty of effort, everything they've done.
And like, we're big enough and bold enough to admit, let's say, when we question a player's commitment or level of commitment in a game, and they come back then maybe a year later or 18 months later and just correct it. I place huge value on that. And if those Tipperary lads had Galway jerseys on yesterday, I'd be so proud of that Galway team. In terms of the way they went about things. You know what I mean? In terms of the way they just fucking went at it. I love to see that phrase. I know it's been used a good bit by people around me here as well. What do you mean go at it? I mean just shackles off, just going at it and playing for each other, playing for your public and your family, whatever you want to call it, not to go too deep in it, but there was no kind of There was no baggage with Tipperary yesterday. It was just a team of 15 or 20 lads going at it and doing what's best for the team. So, yeah, you say that's the best thing I said about Tipperary. That wouldn't be hard, in fairness, but it's warranted. In fairness, it's warranted. I think I've been very positive about Tipperary this year.
I think you have. To be fair, right, you were actually very positive about them after the league game. After the Darren McCarthy red card game. You were very much like on board with... Actually, I saw a lot from Tipperary, particularly in that second half, that was admirable. You could have had the chance to stick the boot in and go, Cork have beaten them easily in this game.
It's the truth, though. Like I'd say, Murph, like you look at the game as well in the same front. You know, like there's an aberration for teams that go ahead the way they go at it. It's like as I said to you last week, it's built into you in Kilkenny, it's in the water. So that's the number one, you know, attribute you want to see from your team is honest endeavour and hard graft. And sure, Tipperary brought out yesterday, but again, that doesn't excuse the goal performance.
Right, forgive me here, Murph, if we can go to him first in this one. I was just so disappointed with Galway, and I didn't know if this was going to be a case of, because I just watched the thriller that was Croke Park before that, and because of the way Dublin had hurled, I flicked the telly on there and I was looking at the Galway Tipperary game, and I was like, by 25-30 minutes every Tipperary forward is on the scoreboard. It's like Tipper just score or taking shots for fun. Galway don't seem to be able to deal with them whatsoever. And I didn't want to say anything to you because I didn't want to ruin your weekend and start winding you up during the middle of the game. My first thought was, Skell is going to be so disappointed without Ireland there.
Like, you'd be heartbroken though, the way it goes on.
Oh.
Wouldn't you? Like, because I was looking forward to the game and I was kind of taking the position that Murph had for Galway and Leinster final, saying, I'm hoping they just produce something now, because again, they have been forewarned in the Leinster final. But I did stipulate a little asterisk beside my pre-game analysis was that, you know, there has been form here, lads, with the amount of beatings we've taken by a large margin by teams who are in the top echelon. And you're coming down the tracks against a Tipperary team who's high-flying. I think I was worried, but at the same time, it's the optimist in me, I have to say, that I was slightly optimistic. But, man, that got just absolutely eradicated in the first 10 minutes. You know? And look, I can take... I always say, like, I like when forwards come and get the ball and they take you on and have to turn out and do this and that and shoot over the shoulder. That's a great score. But the ease at which Tipperary were scoring yesterday, there was no contact whatsoever, you know. And we were devoid of a plan, but we didn't have the basic fundamentals to try and exit our defence yesterday. We couldn't get our second phase of ball going. We couldn't get anything from our midfield. Catastrophic at midfield. You know, we didn't even have a midfielder, to be honest. We couldn't win primary ball in positions 5 through 12, high ball at all. Couldn't win it. You know, over-dependence on Cahill, no structure. And it's like, I see the Tipperary forwards, and we look at if you look at it on the screen, you'll see Rhys Shelley gets the ball, pucks it down, and there's Jake Morris arriving to the ball. What you don't see off camera is Jake Morris sprinting 60 yards, you know, in one direction, then turning and going 60 yards in the opposite direction to make space for himself for that puck out. That just didn't happen for Galway yesterday. So you pity the likes of Derek Fahey, who I thought had a great shot-stopping game yesterday, to be fair. You pity that the options didn't prevail themselves. But, like, you can talk about the landscape of Galway hurling, and you can talk about underage structures, but ultimately the team itself just needs overhaul. Will. That's it. Yeah. And, like, if members of the team can't take that, and they cannot take that, me saying that, that's a bigger issue on them than it is on us. You know,
all right. How radical is the surgery that's needed then?
Well, so look, this. So just where have I written down, Will? I had it there a minute ago, my friend.
No, go on, you find that, because I was listening to Micheál. He was on Galway Bay FM after the game, and he basically didn't want to write any of his older stages off whatsoever. But he was saying, and he was emphasising how many players they looked at during the year, and part of that was with a view towards the future. And the minute I kind of hear towards the future, that has to be a case if you're looking at some of these younger players who, you know, at times, some of them, like Malloy, Burns, there's been a few of them there who have shown reasonably well. Like, are we talking about now at this stage dropping a lot of those players who are in their 30s and now going all towards youth next year, maybe doing a bit like what Liam Cahill did in his first year in Tipperary, where you have to maybe think a step or two ahead? Or what does Micheál do from here? That's what I mean by how radical do you need to go here?
Yeah, so personally speaking, you had said last week that Micheál had used 30 players after the second goalie was brought in.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
But again, I use the word, I have to use an asterisk, Will, because those 30 players were allowed to play with respect in games that didn't have too much on the line. You know, so I can see why the squad numbers are, you know.
But by the way, the massive asterisk I would put in that was the Antrim game. They changed half the team and put a load of lads in. So go on.
So, but still, they end up with the same group now. Look, a lot of that group had played from 2015 back, like, even. You know, so Galway had a good 4 or 5 years there from like 14 to 15 or 14 to 19, right? But since then, like, we've exited out of the group 3 times, you know, and we've lost 4 Leinster finals. So like, we've exited out of the group in 19, lost the semi-final in 2020 after losing the Leinster final. You know, terrible loss against Waterford in 21 after getting knocked out by Dublin. 22 was a loss against Limerick. We won one game against Cork after beating the Leinster final. 23 was a loss against Limerick. We beat Tipperary in the quarterfinal after losing the Leinster final. Mm-hmm. We got beaten by Dublin in the group last year and then exited at the quarterfinal stage, having not beaten Wexford Kilkenny and lost in the Leinster final. So the group as a whole, right, you'd have to say, has competed on an average basis, to be fair. You know, we haven't set the world alight. We've been beaten by teams that are expected to beat us on a repetitive basis. And I will go as far as saying that there does need to be a big overhaul. And I'm talking, in terms of the 15 that started yesterday, you're probably looking at replacing at least 5 of them, if not 6. You know, and I can get behind a team that has shown rejuvenation, that is putting a bit of emphasis on youth. I get that. And if they take a clipping along the way, I said at the start of the year, Will, I'm happy, I'm okay with that. Because there was an allowance, per se, that the first year was a bedding in period. And that, again, Micheál was gone for a few years, so he had to get to re-know the youth of Galway and see what he had. But it screams to me like we just need an overhaul. That's the size of it, you know. And I personally believe that the players run it themselves. You know, I think if you're in that group and you're for one of those players that says, just I can't get to the level I got to before, I can't get to the pace of the players I'm playing against, you know, I think they're all honest enough, genuine people that they'll say to themselves, yeah, it's time to move aside and let someone else try to take over. And if we have, let's say, 20-year-olds or 21, 22-year-olds who go out next year in the league form and the championship form, and we end up in the same stage this year, I'm okay with that. At least we're trying to bed in new players and get some championship experience into them. So,
are that generation of players good enough?
Well, you won't know, Will. This is the question. Mm-hmm. See, you can't base, like, again, you can't base that question off underage success. You can't. You have to get that player, put him into a senior setup and see what he's able to do. You know, did Mossy Keown win any Ireland's underage with Kinney? Maybe he did, but nothing of grave substance. Like, did Hugh Lawler? Maybe, but I can't think about the major. Do you know what I mean? There's players that will come out of the rough regardless of underage career or regardless of underage honours that they've won. You know, there was a stage there where every fucking second person in Galway had a minor medal. You know what I mean? So it's like saying to yourself, like, to be a good senior player, you have to have a minor in 20. That is not true. That's not true at all. You know, so from my perspective, it's a case of you put emphasis on people who are, first of all, honest about what they're trying to do for the team, you know, regardless of where they're from. And I know plenty of young lads that are of the ages, let's say 20 to 23, who would go hammer and tongs for the Galway jersey. Mightn't have the capability at the moment. But like, as I said in the group chat yesterday, and I again opened the correction here, Brian O'Mara wasn't hectic 2 years ago, lads. He wasn't hectic 2 years ago. He's a behemoth now. Mm. You know, he's a tank there at number 7. No problem. He's a mainstay of the Tipperary team. So you have to put time into these lads, you know, and give them the opportunity. Because it's rare you have an outlier with like McCarthy or I don't know who, that can come in and make an instant impact.
Yeah,
you know, players need bedding in periods, and the only time you can get them to bed in is in championship games. Because I keep fucking saying it, there is no correlation between training well and playing in a championship game. Training well is safe, you know. That's or what you've done before. That's BS nowadays. It's what can you produce in championship games? And I'd say I can turn this over to Kilkenny and say the Kilkenny team at the moment, the 15 lads that are on the pitch are the 15 lads who can play best in championship games, not who train the best.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Obviously, because I think, anyway, personally speaking, so I'm not going to go and bash the team because everyone else does that. There's plenty of people in Galway who know little enough to go bashing lads and bash them personally. That's not this. We've all, maybe not two more, but I've been in the situation of times where you've bowed out of the championship, you know, in a poor manner, disappointed with yourself of the way you've played. And like, it's time for reflection. And ultimately, the reflection will have to come from within, I think, because I think Micheál kind of semi-dodged the question yesterday. Is that fair to say?
A little bit, yeah.
You know, if you ask him that in November, it'll be far different, I'd imagine. But like, he's a clever man. You know, he's a very, very, you know, kind of serious operator in the sense that he knows themselves. They know themselves. Yeah. You know, today's a tough day, but look, we just have to get on the rebuilding train, I'm afraid, Will.
Well, look, I hope for your sake it doesn't feel like it's a little bit of a lost year, whereby that rebuild could have started now, and instead now they're a year on, and it might still
be. Well, who'd you find, Will?
Next year. See, I don't know. That's the thing. I mean, you obviously know the scene a bit better than me. I just kind of, it kind of felt like as if once championship came round, key positions started to go back towards some of the older players again that maybe wasn't necessarily getting the league. But that's what I mean. Was that because in the league you didn't see people who could fit into those positions?
Yeah, but the only guy we kind of found was Colin Malai.
Yeah, he's very, very good, by the way.
He's a sharpshooter. Like, he doesn't miss that kid. But like, the only guy we found, everyone else we've known about for quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, there was a number of players that we saw in that I know of under, let's say, under 22 that you'd say could have got opportunities under 23 and they just didn't. You know what I mean? Like, the league form is tough. It's tough to base a person's championship form on the league because the ground conditions are so different and the landscape is different and even the preparation for teams. We speak about this in depth as to the way teams prepare for the league. You know, it's way, way different and it's getting restricted them if he's skipping cups, et cetera, et cetera. So if one guy plays a bad game in February, sure, you can't use that as a baseline for June. Surely. Like, do you know what I mean? You've got to give him a chance in a championship game, you know, and give him a repetitive chance. So that, but like, that's where we're at the moment in terms of that's what we need to be doing. And like, this is coming from a guy who's never managed a senior team, don't get me wrong, but for me looking in as an ex-player and, you know, a guy who wants the best of the team, you're saying to yourself, right, we just need to kind of add some new spice into this mix, lads.
But by the way, I don't think you're being unfair there at all. So I was chatting to Cyril Farrell a little bit when we were walking across the pitch after the Galway Offaly game, and Malloy played really, really well. And I was saying, this looks like a lad who's ready to go, basically. And Cyril was saying, yeah, you know, at college level, he's always looked like he's had that talent. It's just about kind of giving him that responsibility now in the senior team to be able to say, right, go out there and get us a few points each game, and you be the man on that inside forward line now at this stage. So
maybe that's
what it takes.
You know? He got five against Offaly. Was it five?
Class. He was absolutely class then. I know you have to take the standard of opposition in, but he was just direct and he was given a chance to go, run and have shots, and he has all the talent.
The standard of opposition, okay, I'll take your point there, right? But the standard of opposition is one thing in the sense that Malloy has to go get the ball, turn out, let's say, and shoot, etc., right? Yeah. How many times did we see yesterday where there was open opportunities for our forwards? And they shoot a wide. So you can talk about opposition, but there were still situations yesterday where we're, you know, unoccupied. There was no one around the vicinity. Wide balls. And that just sucks the life out of teams. Right? And this has happened repeatedly, Will, in the last number of years. So, like, again, I maybe I'm wrong. I don't see myself getting much flack in Galway for what I'm saying, because I'd say there's a lot of people aligned. You know, and I can't answer the question of the players there. I think the potential quality is there if it's harnessed. But there's only one way to find out, lad.
Yeah, look, Murph, we're not forgetting about you as we try and get Skell to break down the problems.
I'm enjoying this story.
Now, during the game,
I'm not enjoying you being in the game here, but I'm enjoying listening to the conversation.
Like, Galway is 16 wides. They had so many other shots where, again, kind of like passing up the responsibility of taking a shot. They're so reliant on Colm Mannion, which it's been all year. 13 points he scores. First half, he scores 9 of their 11 points. I'm watching Tipperary at the other end, Murph, and they're so free scoring, particularly in that first half. I think I had it written down on my sheet that all of their forwards had scored a couple of points each by half an hour into the game. Like, that's a machine that's working. That's Tipperary picking good positions for shots, passing it around, looking threatening. I think they got 50 shots off during the game, or is it 51 shots off during the game? That, to me, looks like a team who are going in the right direction. Galway, I don't know. It just, to me, it felt like a really, really strange performance from them, because we thought that maybe there was going to be a kick when they went into the knockout stages.
Yeah, it was so lackluster. Because the thing is, like, Galway had 16, Tip had 14 though as well. But the thing was Tip were creating a lot more than Galway. So you'd make your peace with the fact that they were hitting a few wides. But there's very little difference between that. But it's just a matter of how Tipperary were going about it. Like, I was making notes there, and Jason Ford had 4 points. I'm fairly sure he had 4 points from play at 20 minutes. So at that stage, like, that was before he got his sidelines and popped over. I think he got one free after that. But like, he was cruising at that stage. And they were even like, you saw going up the line, Sam O'Farrell get a ball, recycle back out, Jason Ford over the bar. They had a system. They had a way about they were playing. Whereas Galway just looked so disjointed. I mean, they had about two or three opportunities where they could have created some sort of a goal, but there was hand pass going awry. There was like, players weren't linking in. They didn't have a great understanding. But when you looked at Tipperary, They were playing on the front foot, very much like we said about Dublin. They were going forward. They were aggressive in what they were doing. That man, Jake Morris, like, you know, Skell mentioned him there. Like, he was making these runs, and you're just like, that's like diagonal kind of runs, not straight in line where defenders can actually really do something about it. Cutting across, lads, with speed and intent, popping the ball over the bar, resetting. Like, Andrew Ormond, outstanding again. Like, both of them got 5 points from play. 5 points from play from 1 year forwards in a game. usually
I think,
mean.
I think that's 10 points from playing the last two games for Ormond, by the way. I think he got five against Leash as well.
And he gave a great interview after the game as well. Like, I mean, he just spoke how much he's enjoying it. I suppose bringing it back to one of the points he said at the start, and I think Skehill said it about why, you know, people go into games and maybe not attending. Like, Liam Cahill said it after the game that, you know, they want to give the Tipperary people something to follow and something to support. And basically, his line was, look, if there's something up for grabs, we're going out and fighting for it, which is a great attitude, but it's not a throwaway comment because they actually do embody that type of a team at the moment who are really going out. And, you know, I've great time for Liam Cahill in that way. Like, I liked him when he was at Waterford. I liked what he was doing. I liked his intent. It didn't work out for him every day. And at the start of it against Tipperary, he got a lot of slack as well. With Tipperary, he got quite a lot of flack at the start. But not to say stuck to his guns, but, like, you know, stay determined, stay focused, stay grinding away. Had to go through a few of those hard days as well where, you know, maybe people were looking going, where is Tipperary going to pull something out of? But, like, he's moulded a savage team there at the moment that have lads to come in off the bench. And I think even, I suppose, quite similar to Dublin, like, bringing in those few lads who drifted from the panel as well before, Willie Connors being one. Like, you know, Willie Connors was on the panel, stepped away from the panel or was dropped from the panel for a year or so, came back in kind of with invigorated a small bit. And just all around the field, they just seem to have those players that are playing with real intent that I think they don't really care they came, you know, third in Munster. They're just looking, going, we have a crack at Liam McCarthy here now and a real serious crack at it because they won't fear Cork. Like, we'll get to when that game comes. Or sorry, Kilkenny, should I say. They won't fear Kilkenny at all. They'll love it. They'll relish it. And I really feel that they're in a good space at the moment, maybe off the back of the last few years not having gone as well. And there's an expectation in Tipperary, no more than Kilkenny, that, you know, you should, even if it's not going well for you, you should be playing with anger and playing with aggression. So, like, Tipperary, I completely understand why Tipperary people are following this team. They're playing a really nice brand of hurling. And considering they mightn't have the household names they had 10 years ago, they're playing a savage brand of hurling that the Tipperary people can get behind.
The goal was beautiful as well, Murph. The tip goal. And I'm not talking about the Galway goal now, which was at the end, which was a little bit scrappy. I'm talking about, like, Tip's move. I'm talking about the pass for that goal as well. It was kind of the exclamation point that killed the game, but beautifully worked.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was incredibly worked. But it typified really what they were about. Like, they were happy enough. They went through once or twice in goal. I'm thinking particularly in the first half. In the second half, they had a few runs once Galway opened up, but they weren't too fussed about threatening goal because they were kicking on the scoreboard in terms of points. But it was just so well worked, so well executed. But what I like about Tipperary at the moment, I say this like they're facing Kilkenny next, so I don't want to like too much about them. But they're not forcing the issue in that regard either. You know, like, as in, if they have an opportunity to get the ball over the bar, take the score and reset, they're doing it. But when a goal opportunity is coming up, they have the players to go at it and actually take on the goal. But no, it was a savagely worked score. Excellent goal for them. And just came at the right time as well, really. Just, I mean, whatever chance Galway had, it really just buried them. Like,
yeah, it was incisive. It was clinical. It was a huge win for Tipperary. I know exactly what Murph would say, and I know we'll preview this game next week. But Tipperary's chances of lifting the Liam McCarthy scale from here, well, how do you rate them? You always have your percentages.
Dublin's chances of beating Limerick, if you asked me 4 or 8 hours ago, I'd say zero. So, like, anything can happen in this championship, I swear to you.
Yeah.
Like, they're as good as any will. Yeah. So, we've played in these games more, right? If you get past the semi-finals are for winning. That's it. That's it. Mm. Right? Regardless of what happened, you get to a final, anything happens. Anything happens in a final. You know, so, like, Tipperary versus Kilkenny, 50-50 left. It's 50-50. Mm. This game can go anyway. It'll come down to health. Is everybody fit and free? Like, in a Kilkenny perspective and Tip perspective. And it comes down to the few big moments in the game that'll happen, like every semi-final does, and one team gets the rub of the green as opposed to the other. Because I don't see the situation developing whereby Tipperary run through Kilkenny or vice versa. I think you agree. That's fair, Murph. I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's very equal. I haven't seen the spread yet, but I think it's very equal. It might be.
It is equal at the moment, yeah.
It is equal. There you go. So like, it's hard to find a degree of separation after him. Bearing a big moment in the game that sways towards the team. You know, I, as I said, I hope it doesn't go down to a referee decision. I don't think it will, because generally when it gets to this stage, the game is free-flowing. It's like a change when it gets to the knockout stages. But have they a chance to win Ireland? Absolutely, 110%. Just things have changed. It's like, do you remember back in 19? This is not to be disrespectful, right? Murphy, he did the damage. He took out the perceived juggernaut in Limerick at 19, in 19, right? Then he got to the final. I, that final is 50-50, lad. And then obviously the incident with the sending off had a big bearing on the game. You know what I mean? And that's how the gap was so wide. That can happen in sport, Will. So we can stay here and say, I'm putting my money in this team's basket only if they all stay in the field, they're all fit, no referee decisions, weather, all this kind of stuff you want to talk about. Mm. You know, all those times with all of them have to kind of be negated and kept away. So if every team is like that, fit, etc., Tipper with a perfect shout. Perfect shout. And the thing is, there's a lot for history. There's an awful lot to set for history. Jamie Jay said to me before, if you were on a Kilkenny panel or Tip panel for 10 years, right, you're guaranteed in Ireland. Like, that's what he said. And he meant this because he said there's an awful lot for history. The only team that's kind of letting that down at the minute is Cork for a club or a county of their size. So, like, there's no new ground here, new territory, regardless if some of these Tipperary players haven't played in Croke Park previously. Yes, they haven't won Ireland in 6 years and haven't been there in 6 years. But do you think Darren McCarthy gives a shit about that? Like, that's an emphatic no, my friend. Doesn't give a shit. Reece Shelley in the goals, doesn't give a shit. He's looking forward to spraying that ball. You know, so they have that in the water down there as well, that there's like nearly what somewhat of a semi-divine right to play in Croke Park and contest these finals or semi-finals. So anything can happen, my man.
Yeah, just on Reece Shelley there, Skell, his distribution very, very good. It was obviously important during the game too. I guess he's now firmly established as number one.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
100%.
Oh, yeah. That's science he delivered, yeah. That's science he delivered because if you go back to the Clare game, you know, his distribution, particularly against the Breeze, let's say in the second half, within his own half, was pivotal. It was pivotal. So, like, he's able to go long and go short. He's energetic. So, yesterday when they chose to go with the Breeze, I just said to myself, he's going to be important again in the second half. So, this is before the game started, mind you, when we saw the toss. Mm. So that you said, right, there's going to be an opportunity for Galway to try and shut down their puck out, you know, because the distance. And didn't miss a beat, Will. Didn't miss a beat. It was business as usual in the second half. And you're saying, we just couldn't touch him. You know, I think we only cut him out once. And that was beyond 60 yards. So you can give a man, you know, a bit of free space every now and then, but 60 yards. But if it's in his own 21 or his own 40, it's one thing, but it wasn't beyond 60 yards. So he's imperiously striking, to be fair. He'll be disappointed with the goal, the second goal. Of course he will. That was a slight bit of indecisiveness, whether to catch it or save it, because the awkwardness of the shot, it was a really awkward shot, and they happen rarely. So, but I think if that's in the heat of the championship, like where there's like a draw or a point in it, that's going with the hurt. So, again, learnings from every day. There's learnings from all.
Chris O'Connor just put his article out in the Irish Examiner there, which is something we talked about earlier on, is how big this shock is. He reckons it's the biggest shock in 50 years. So I think, I hate to use phrases like modern hurling, but definitely you could.
What happened in 1975?
That's what I'm wondering. I haven't quite got to the bottom of it yet. But 50 years to me is very clearly defined as in the modern game, this is the biggest shock ever.
I checked now and say, why 50 years?
Yeah. And he's making a very fair point here that Dublin tipped 66-1 with the bookies after Chris Crummy was sent off.
Go away. 66-1. Sure, look. Yeah.
Ask him there what happened in 1975. We can pick it up on the members pod if we have to as well. I always like reading Christie's articles, but I'm not going to read it live.
I was actually looking for it, I'll be honest. I was actually looking for Christie's article there before we were going to record this pod, because I was like, I want to see what Christie's saying.
Yeah. So he reckons 50
as years. As usual with us, when we need something, it gets dropped just after the pod is recorded. So if it's like fixtures, man. If it's like, I think we've had even things like lads retiring and stepping down the day or like the evening. Oh, Jesus. So
I'm pretty sure that when Davy Fitz left Waterford, we had just stopped recording.
And
it
I think
was like within
you,
about 10 minutes of it, I think.
Yeah, and I think you had said something like, will Davy be going? I don't know. I'd expect something maybe later this week if it is. Like 10 minutes after it. Yeah, yeah. So we have it's like my kiss of death, as someone said. Who said that?
That was amazing.
Was it Sheedy? Something Sheedy said that.
Ooh, let me come back to that. Let us go back all the way around from earlier on. I definitely... Yeah, I took a picture of it on Twitter just to have it. David Sheedy got straight back underneath. I think I'd put up something.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's the most remarkable performance ever from Dublin. And then David Sheedy 5 is here saying, the last time that Paul Murphy backed a team to win by 10 plus points was Cork versus Waterford. And look how that turned out. The Paul Murphy kiss of death.
Ah, yeah. Tip by 10, so.
I don't know which you were more conclusive about, whether Cork were going to go and hammer Waterford that day, or like we were very dismissive of Dublin, let's be fair, last week.
Oh, it's not dismissive. Like, I mean,
it was based on evidence. It wasn't. And like, to be fair to Junior Zed Hurler, or Mife as he is on Instagram, who's a Dublin fan that's always in contact with us, he said straight away, he was like, what the lad said last week was more than fair enough. Everyone was thinking that.
It's 100%. It's not dismissive at all. If you look at, we spoke about Galway and Tipperary not being separated by more than 3 points in 35 years.
Since 88, yeah.
And Tipperary were ahead by 12 points at one stage in that game. So for us to say Limerick are going to beat Dublin by 10 is absolutely conservative. It's not even reasonable. It's conservative.
Even as I said, we mentioned my diehard family member, the Dublin med, right? Mm. He said, and I quote, and if you're listening, he's definitely listening, you won't be missing Anthony in the first game anyway. That's what he said. So
yeah. I'm good friends with a good Plunkett's man, Aina Boland, Keane Boland's brother, formerly of the Dublin panel. And he was up in Donegal for the weekend and I was chatting to him. And he said he was with his wife's family in a pub. And he had to leave the pub to gather himself. He'd walk outside. He said he was shaking. But he said he had to go to the bathroom. He went into a pub and the first pub said, no, we have football on. I think it was Cavan and Kerry they had on. He was like, can we watch the hurling? Said, no. And wow. So I think they went to another pub. Yeah, they wouldn't change it.
But, well, I don't know. I know, but still, like, it was the terrestrial game of the TV in Dublin we're playing.
Yeah. But anyway, he went down, I think he went into another pub and down the back, in fairness, they had it on. And I think his wife noticed that, like, he was a little bit, he was riled up after it. So they were like, listen, I think you should just walk outside for 10 minutes.
Good for him. Good for him.
That's great. It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. But I had a load of friends text me from, like, work and different things. Just Jesus. That was all it was. That was all that was needed. So, unbelievable.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Shock of the century. Shock of the half century, according to Christy. Did he come back and tell you what happened in 75? No.
Not shit, my friend. I texted
Vietnam or something, was it?
this could very well end up in the members pod because I'm sure he'll come back not long after that. That will also be out.
We could list. We're trying our best to list bigger shocks because I defy anybody to give me a bigger shock.
Well, you won't find it in hurling. Again, we always say the context is everything. You won't find it in this sport. You just won't.
No.
You won't. You have to go beyond and go to worldwide sport. I had to go beyond. I couldn't figure out. I ranked it third. I have ranked it third in the biggest sporting shocks in the world. Okay. In the world.
Oh, my God.
So there's a few here. That were suggested, which was Leash Dublin.
That's best.
Yeah, Leash Dublin 2019. Galway taking out Kilkenny in 2001 and the All-Ireland semi-final in
2005.
Clare beating Cork in
1993. No.
Galway's semi-final ambush in 1985.
No.
Offaly's first Leinster final win, I think, was against Kilkenny. Which may be a bit of a surprise because I'd never won a senior before that. But I would have thought if you're putting Offaly in the conversation here anywhere, that has to be the 1989 defeat, the semi-final defeat to Antrim. Yeah. These are some that Christie's picked out in the last kind of 40, 50 years that were big ones. He's not
Christie has
bigger.
Those in.
Yeah.
No, Christie, you're wrong.
Well, he's not. Well, he said it's the biggest.
I'm joking, I know.
No, yeah, he says the biggest since 50. I think he's listing out these are some that are comparable or they were seismic results that were seen as like a massive shock. Yeah, it's up there with any of them. Mm. I would say
yes, really.
I wouldn't have any of them above this.
No.
So well, Dublin,
I defy anyone, right? To just don't just pick a fixture, and give us ample reason as to why that this tops the Dublin Limerick game. Don't just say someone said something in fucking London versus Galway 19-0 or something. I don't want to hear about that. Okay.
Sorry as well, right? And this is not going to go against the Rackards or the Mackies or any of the legends from back in the day or the Rings. We can only go on match reports that we've read or what we've heard about and so on. So that's the reason oftentimes I only like to go with what I've actually witnessed or been around for. So that I can give it the context of being here. So you could tell me again like that. It was the time that London came over on a boat and beat the Cork team in the 1923 game in, I don't know, somewhere in Mayo. And this was the biggest shock of all time. But none of us were there to witness it. I will take your suggestion. But I think if in terms of modern hurling or what any of the three of us have seen, this is as big a shock as I've ever seen.
Yeah,
definitely. 100%.
Hit us up in the comments. Hit us up on Spotify, as you did. Don't go back in after time and go back and listen to the end of this pod after the semi-finals and then come back for us, like some of you did this week. But I'm taking all the flack because we were a little bit late in getting the pod out. Dublin have gained two supporters in, you know, Scale and Murphy. I hate them, so I don't really care what they do from here. Yeah,
you're clear bias.
Yeah, no, from now on, I'm going to embrace this. Plough them out of it, Cork.
Isn't that what happens at the start of each year when we negotiate our terms to come back to start? Will just says, as long as I can maintain my anti-Dublin bias, then I'm on. I'm in for it.
I'm not even keeping under the radar now.
You know, you pick a quote out, let's say, to kind of headline the
Yeah.
Just say, I hate Dublin. Put up, go on, say it. We're Catalan. I hate Dublin.
I hate Dublin.
Yeah. It was said, albeit in jest, it was said at some point.
Look at the trouble got me in Tipperary.
Ah, that was a bit of crack, though. Like, they've kept that going. Like, I think you've softened the Tipperary, even after the lads on the Premier Review pod last week were giving it the old. Those two lads are decent. I think you've softened on Tip as a result.
You've endeared yourself.
Where's your pure visceral hatred?
Where's that gone? It's still there. Believe you me, my friend. It is still there. Okay. But I'm also a realist to know our position at the moment. I'm in no position of power right now. I can't say shit.
I was trying to egg him on yesterday. I texted him before the Oak, and I can't remember. I think I texted him saying, you should put up Leinster Hurling's better than Munster or something like that. So I was like, I'd love, because Skell likes a little grenade. And he just texted me back and said, I have to keep my powder dry for an hour. I was like, fair. I didn't even think about it. I was like, okay, fair.
Yeah.
Murphy, alas. Imagine the flack I get. Imagine what would happen.
I thought you would have liked.
I'd have to go defending myself saying Galway or in Connacht. I meant Leinster.
I would have been taking advantage of a man. Like, if you had a few points in you now yesterday and I text you that would have been taking advantage. Because you would have done. You would have just put it out there.
Lewis Cannon, 100% of the time. Yeah.
Look, the third place team in Leinster beat the runners up in Munster, and the third place team in Munster beat the runners up in Leinster. To me, both championships are equal, aren't they? That's my reading of it.
That's one thing we can take from this weekend. Yeah,
we can stick with that. By the way, for those who haven't quite moved this direction yet, if you want to watch us, we're on YouTube, Off the Ball. You can see us. This pod is free to consume every week. You can also do the same on Spotify. If you go to the Off the Ball stack on Spotify, I put the video up there. You can watch it there. And as I explained, if you're listening last week, due to some kind of pixie magic, if you put the phone into lock mode, it will continue on in the audio form. You reopen your phone again, you can rewatch the video again. It's a pretty good way to consume it if you're traveling around, or you can just pick it up wherever you pick up your podcast. We got quite a few reviews, none of them negative from last week, I noticed too. So I was expecting that after the Dublin result. If you can keep on rating us, leave us comments, leave us all that type of stuff, that helps to push the pod to more people as well. And it would be very appreciated by all three of us. Paul Murphy, thank you, sir.
Thanks very much, lads.
James Skell, you said you were like a farmer who has lost his sheep. I hope you can re-find them.
Don't have sheep, fuck them.
Okay. Right, see everybody next week. Take it easy.